I'm ready.
Okay, I'll go ahead and call us to order this morning for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on June 10th. If the audience would join the board for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning.
I'm ready.
We're one short today, and I think we'll be one short next week also, so we'll just kind of do the best we can. Next is public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not see anybody moving towards the mic. We'll go to consideration of minutes for 6-3.
Move approval.
Second. Is there any additions or corrections? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The minutes have been approved. Personnel actions. Look like they're all in order there.
Move approval.
Second. Any further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The personnel actions have been approved. Under consent agenda, we're going to pull item number five for just a little bit of discussion, and we need to add a utility permit, a couple of them, 1449 through 1451.
1449 and through 51. Okay. Through. Okay. I would move the consent agenda with noted changes.
I'll second that. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The consent agenda minus number five has been approved. Now, number five. Consideration of temporary increase in the sheriff's employee strength. Morning, Sheriff.
Welcome, Sheriff. How are you?
Morning.
Glad to have you over this morning.
Glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Sure thing.
The request that I have before you today is not new to the Sheriff's Office. We've done this on other occasions. And what we have done here is just over a year ago, one of our detention officers, Zachary Skelton, also serves the United States military. His unit was called, and he was deployed to Afghanistan for a year. Therefore, I granted him a year's leave of absence. So when we've had other leaves in the past, what we have done is, with the permission of the board, I fill that vacant position. And then when the person comes back, that position we hold on to because of the turnaround that we have in the sheriff's office, that extra position is then absorbed. And we have received word now that coming back on Detention Officer Skelton will be returning to work June 30th. And that will leave with Detention Officer Sink, is the one that was hired to fill in Skelton's place in his absence. What I'm asking the board to do is allow me to maintain that position. And what our intent will be is that as soon as we have a vacancy develop within the jail division, that will then settle our numbers back to the appropriate authorized strength. Exactly how long that will be, I don't know, but history has shown that the jail division, being our largest division, has more turnover than any of the other places. And if there's anything else in the sheriff's office that would open up, that would also help to bring our numbers back in line. And in request for doing that, I understand that the cost for holding this person for an extra however long it will take will have to be absorbed within my budget. I'm not asking for additional dollars to do this.
Yes, and thank you, Sheriff. Okay. Okay, and thank you, Sheriff. Yeah, I think, as you say, yes, we have had this happen in the past. It's not something that happens frequently, but it's one of the accommodations usually when we have people leave for military leave and still need to maintain support for your office to function. And I think the letter in the documentation, as you've clearly outlined, is something that in continue to work with Alyssa on HR person in terms of positioning, but hopefully I do know that that's our main concern right now, is that there won't be any additional budgetary requirements to maintain this position in the interim. So, good.
Okay. Anything further?
No. Good. I would move approval of the request for consideration of a temporary increase in the sheriff's office employee strength.
I'll second that. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
I'd like to just express on the board's behalf appreciation for D.O. Skelton for his service to his country.
You bet. Absolutely.
Thank
please
you.
Do.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay. I think that takes us down to, wait a minute, is the engineer here?
Reports.
I think we're down under
departmental reports.
There's no public hearing, no additional items.
IT. Barb? We're just moving right along this morning.
I was going to say, I'm lost. Three pages. Well, I have a long report, so if I start to bore you, you know, just let me know and I'll move on.
Let us know when we need to stand up and do some exercise.
Jumping jacks. First of all, I wanted to update you on our IP phone upgrade. We started last November. We're progressing. It's slow. There's always details that you find with each implementation. Some of it gets easier, but also you find new details that you missed. Our next rollout tentatively is scheduled for the county attorney on June 18th. However, this morning, just before this meeting, I found out that there's issues with the porting of the numbers. And I know Windstream has been undergoing some internal changes with the absorption of Paytech. Apparently, they no longer have our numbers for county attorney. So we don't know who has them or why they're working. But when we submitted the port document, they said they don't exist. That's a little scary, a week out from the port. So I'll be calling Windstream later today. Now, the reason I've split out the county attorney from the Justice Center, in the past we've done one building at a time. There are issues with the E911 implementation at the Justice Center, and it seemed to me I didn't want to complicate things more by adding an IP phone system to troubleshoot until they get that E911 system stable, because the numbers we'll be dealing with pass through that system, especially the 6566, which is the main number for the Sheriff's Department. That goes through dispatch, which goes through that new 911 equipment. We do have weekly update calls with Raycom, and they have promised a patch. I think you're aware that the whole system crashed about 2 weeks ago. So they have a patch they're going to release on June 12th. I want to make sure that's good and stable. Story County was the first one they rolled out, and that was several months ago, and we're still having issues. So I don't foresee the Justice Center being implemented with a new phone system soon. I'd give it a couple months. The conservation rollout is scheduled for July, dependent on the fiber connection, and this will be the first time conservation is on the same phone system as the rest of the county. So that's exciting. And we're working with the Colo Phone Company, who 2 years ago, it was a dream, you know, for them to have all this fiber. And now they're working as Central Iowa Broadband, and they're bringing fiber into the Justice Center. Actually, they brought it in last week. They're also going to include the high school in part of their fiber run, which is why we got it in there so quickly. And then that will also give us the opportunity to connect Hickory Grove to conservation, and then conservation will come into the Justice Center and they'll come over to the admin building for email and stuff. So it's a little bit complicated, but in the end we'll all have connectivity and bandwidth to do what we need to do, and we'll have four-digit dialing between all of the offices. And I just wanted also to note that even though this project is going past the fiscal year, it wasn't anticipated to do that, but, you know, best laid plans. I have ordered all of the hardware so that it hits this budget. There'll be some minimal service charges. However, we did budget for a full year of lighted services, so we've got some surplus there that I will be handing back. I also wanted to note that we replaced 176 computers this year so far as part of that Windows XP replacement. As you probably have heard, Microsoft retired Windows XP in April, And we hadn't replaced computers for 7 to 8 years. So we had a lot of them to do. Brian was busy, and we've reached the end of that. So we're happy about that. However, now we have to look at Vista. That will be the next replacement. Microsoft plans to retire the Vista operating system within 2 years. Hopefully, and this is what we're moving toward, instead of having to support three different operating systems, actually it was four because Windows 8 has been released on some of our newer computers, we'd like the county to be all on Windows 7 by the time this is done. So maybe I'm reaching for the stars, I don't know. It would just make support a lot easier in the IT office.
Good to be optimistic.
Yes, it is. I wanted to update you, too, on the audio plans for the boardroom. Originally, we had planned on two microphones and a mixer to upgrade the current equipment, and I had been here a few weeks ago to talk about that. And then we talked with Shelley again last week to kind of confirm this is what we need to do. And since a lot of our meetings occur, like the after-hours meetings, near the front of the room, we thought maybe we should add two more microphones. So we presented that option to the vendor, and I just received an email from him yesterday saying maybe we need to rethink that because we're going from a system that's pretty much automatic to one that will be more manual, and he just wants to talk to us and make sure, is this what you actually want to do? So I need to respond to him on that. I don't think four microphones would add too much complexity. Shelley should be able with her... There'll be a dial on the mixer that she can dial the microphones up or down depending on who's talking and what area of the room. So,
okay, so when you say the two was probably going to be originally back in that area,
yes.
And
yes.
So the others would end up being...
in this area, this front area.
So when you say front area, would this probably be gone, the desk itself, or not? Or
no.
They would still be there?
So
it'd be more for, like when your board meets the regional board.
Right.
If you've got people that are seated, say, in this area out here, then you can also pick up the audio. You can record those meetings and pick up the audio.
Well, then, yeah, I understand. Nine times out of ten, though, they are within 2 or 3 feet of where Drew's sitting. So it's not really, they're not really way up here. Our tables kind of start right a foot or two from the end of that table there, so I don't know if we're...
Is it possible to move your tables back to where the microphones are if we just get two?
When we do budgeting sessions, the tables are right...
The budgeting sessions, yeah, that's the only time. That's that week.
When we do square table configurations, tables are up here, so we figured that it would be better to have some here and some back there so that everything is covered.
Well, I mean, if you're planning to do it, obviously the more space we cover, the better, so you may not have to add things in the future. So I'm just looking at it from a cost standpoint and the fact that how often would we actually be utilizing, you know, that rather than normally at a normal board meeting, we're going to use just the two for the general audience, because unless we're going to move the podium from where it's at now, you know, people are going to still pretty much be far enough away from us, and that's my only concern. You're talking...
We were just going to add three, but Dave said that the cost of adding a fourth is minimal.
Right.
Yeah, so...
It's about $2,700 for two microphones. When you get to four, you have a little bit of, it's not, you know, one per one, it's a little bit of a price break. So we're looking at close to $5,000 for four microphones.
Plus, he also said that if you're going to do all of the work and the wiring, you might as well go ahead and do it now instead of later.
Okay. All right. Well, as long as we've thoroughly vetted, you know, the pluses and minuses of it, and...
And I think that's something we can discuss because the rep's coming this afternoon, right?
He wants to meet this afternoon. I don't have availability, so we'll see. Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wanted to update you on our networking projects. We have lots of networking projects going on. It seems that's what IT is all about nowadays is connectivity. We have been working with the IT staff from the three agencies, ISU, City of Ames, and Story County, to design a redundant 911 network. And we've met twice now. We have another meeting on Thursday. Basically, this is a redundant route. If the 911 fiber goes down, it won't be down because it'll pick up on this. We've designed the route. Now we have to review it and see if this is still what we agree to, because we've come up with two different plans, one when Kenny was here and now a different one since he's been gone. But now we'd like to determine what our hardware needs will be and what each entity will contribute toward that, and then we'll have to figure out who's going to manage it. The DOT fiber, which has been a hot topic for the last few years with Story County, that has been landed, so to speak, and we got four strands with the DOT ICM project. Two of these strands will be used for that 911 redundant path. So we'll have two strands that we need to figure out what we're going to do with. And we have started on getting the network feed prepared for OpenFox. Summit Technologies has come in and they have extended the fiber. Now this will replace Datamax, which is kind of been a sore topic with after-hours IT calls. There's been a lot of problems with Datamax and its issues with the software, not necessarily the connection. So we've purchased OpenFox licenses to replace Datamax, and they will go into effect July 1st. So we're working on preparing to get that ready. We did have an ICN request, which I came to the board with, and we signed the contract. They requested 12 strands of dark fiber from Story County that we weren't using, and this would they were going to use to better serve their customers at the Justice Center, which would be the state offices. They have completed that and turned it over, and then I just received an email from them last week saying, you know, we're so happy with that project, and since it went so well, we're looking to see if you have additional spare fiber that we can lease from you. So it looks like we're going to be working pretty closely with ICN in the future. I responded to, I believe it was Ken that sent me the email and just said, you know, we need to review what we've got first. I don't want to, looking at our future plans and what we currently have, I don't want to make us short.
Now, let me just help me understand. This is not going to be an access room or an area where outside folks could come in or other county departments could come in and hook up to the state ICN network, right?
No.
This is just totally...
This is they're serving their customers, like clerk of court and the,
right. Okay.
The service, like the human services that they have in that building.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
It's their network. I believe they use it for billing purposes and data transfer and things.
Right. Good. Okay, thank you.
I did receive a call also from the DOT asking when we were going to have the direct fiber connection from the DOT to the treasurer's office installed, and this was news to me. A little more questioning revealed that this was part of the BTOP project that Story County had declined to participate in, and at that time the DOT was offering free fiber connections based on a federal grant. I'm not sure why Story County declined. I didn't decline, so I'm not sure if that kind of got lost in the transition. I've reached out to my DOT contacts to see if we can get more information on this. It's either near or there because the grant is over. I'd just like to know, you know, what happened and what we need to do to get a connection. Their goal is to have all the treasurer's offices have a direct fiber connection to the DOT in the next year. A little bit of update. We talked briefly about the Conservation Hickory Park connection. They plan to have this live July 1st. As I mentioned, Nevada School also has a July 1st deadline. This will allow, Mike is moving more workstations over to Hickory Park. This will allow them to have four workstations and four phones at that location, and we have already installed, we did put wireless over there to help them because they had a DSL connection formerly, and they increased that, still a little slow. So we installed a wireless network there and some new hardware. The place is on a gravel road, so it's really dusty, and I always have a concern with IT equipment when it's dusty, but we're trying to equip it as best we can based on the circumstances there. You can't do a lot. I told them, make sure you keep your windows and your doors shut, but, you know, dust is dust. It'll get there, so... But Mike has been adding a lot of other features to his network. 2 years ago, what seemed to us to be, you know, our connection would handle that. He's added more internet use and GIS, which is a huge resource hog. So hopefully this connection will handle the GIS. As far as what we've tested, it will. So cross our fingers. And that brings me to future expansion. We had we currently have a 20 meg connection between the admin building and the Justice Center for Internet Traffic. That was a 10 meg that we upgraded last year. It was kind of a painful process, but we're finally to the point where, yes, it is about 20 meg. However, we've absorbed that so quickly, we haven't even noticed a difference. We're doing a lot more online training. There's a lot more with EDMS and with GIS. So we're looking at more options to increase our internet bandwidth, and Central Iowa Broadband may be able to help us with that too. When they brought in the connection for conservation, they brought in a few extra strands. They're not ours, but they're available if we need them. And we really need to examine our future needs, because the conduit that comes into the building is now full. So if we need to add anything more or increase, we're going to have to find a different solution. One suggestion would be perhaps a conduit up the side of the building. But we also need to decide what we're going to do with the handhole outside the building. That concrete has been ripped up 3 times now, and I say we don't concrete it over until we decide exactly what our needs are going to be. So we have options, which is a good thing. It's nice that there is a central handhold over by the hospital that we can tap into when we need to. But the connection in Ames, I don't know if you're aware that the internet connection that HSC and CLP share is just a 5 meg DSL connection. Very slow. Yesterday we were having issues with it. County attorney was trying to get to EDMS and had issues. We need to increase that as well. One option might be, since there's fiber to the HSC building, bring them here to get their internet connection and then just utilize that DSL for CLP only. That's a good option. I think that'll work for CLP. And then, too, you know, since we don't know really the future of them, that would make things a little easier for us if we need to disconnect it. I've also been working on the project, the microwave connection, as you've heard from facilities and emergency management. We're working with also the Sheriff's Department, trying to, what turned out to initially be an inspection turns out to be a replacement for the microwave tower here. It was, you know, I always try to think of things as glass half full, so this gave us an opportunity. Nobody really knew what traffic passed over that tower, and so we've had an eye-opening experience and found what we thought was a backup link is actually passing paging traffic, so we need to be careful about this replacement, but I think we're pretty much determined. We're at the point where we know what traffic passes through that, and now we need to come up with the verbiage for the RFP. So that'll include the capability to be able to handle all of that. And then we'll see what happens. I'm just hoping we'll have more than one vendor respond. We did participate in the server move, which Cal mentioned last week, from CLP to HSC. This was quite an experience. I was the photographer, and it was kind of funny. The UPS unit was about the size of a refrigerator, and getting it up on the elevator was no feat. But once we got it outside of the building and tried to load it on the trailer, we had a plywood ramp built, and You know, here I was standing there cheering and clapping when I should have been taking pictures about all the people who were standing there pushing and shoving and trying to get that UPS unit up onto the trailer while the plywood was cracking. So we did get it there. We did find out afterwards, once again, you don't find out until something goes down. There was an issue with the black box equipment after we took down the UPS. The fire suppression system went into alarm, and then the Annie Alley, it shows the address when a 911 calls in, that was down. Black box was even doing some head scratching, trying to figure out what was going on, and what we just needed to do was reboot both black box equipment and in a certain order, and then we got that all back. So every time you do something, you find out something new, things that you don't even think should be documented. Tyler Content Management, this has kind of been a thorn in the side for IT for several years. We're still stuck on trying to get the stamps and annotations converted into version 10. My last update was that they're working on this internally and hope to get back to me by the end of the week. That seems to be a standard by the end of the week type response. We had contracted with Solutions, since Solutions is a direct competitor of Tyler, and they're more comfortable with a GUI environment, and all of our stamps and annotations are stored within the IBM system. So Tyler wasn't real comfortable with the way images are stored, and they aren't stored as a picture. They're stored more as an index and an address to something. So they had asked us to contract with Solutions to convert these, and we paid Solutions $16,000, and they converted them, and we still had issues, and Tyler finally told us, well, it's not in a format we can use, and my response was, well, I forwarded on to them what you told us you needed. So now they are working directly with Solutions and hope to have something for me by the end of the week. We will see. I'm not real confident in using their product for countywide. I think if we limit it to the real estate, we had once talked about content management for the entire county with Tyler's product. I'm not real comfortable with that, and I'm not one to put all my eggs in one basket, so I really think that a different solution for the rest of our documents would be a good idea. We're also working on online reservations for conservation. If you'll recall, we met last year and we got the credit card payments and online reservations for planning and development, the forms and things that they needed to fill out. So we worked with GTS on that. We're going to do the same thing for conservation. Now they've got 15 forms. I think with the basis already in place, we should be able to complete this on our own. And Matt Corey has been really a good source in helping with this. They'd like to do, like, sign up for classes and reserve campsites and reserve the building through online. What they currently do now is somebody sends in a check or they pay the day of, and this really hampers, it creates a lot of extra work for the staff at conservation because then they have to either call the people or send in a confirmation back or a receipt back. And for a $5 class, I don't see the, you know, I think this is a waste of their time. So if we can do things online and if they don't pay, it's first come, first serve, we can find a better way for them to do their scheduling for their classes and things. So that's all I have for you this morning. Do you have any questions?
Not a question, but a thought. You mentioned the issue with Tyler and Solutions, et cetera. And I could have the wrong company, but at ISAC this spring for the first time, I was thinking it was DevNet. I'm not real sure if that's the right name. They were there, and I met them. I know they're an out-of-state group. They are trying to make inroads into Iowa. If I'm not mistaken, Marshall County has utilized or using them. You might want to just touch base with their IT director there in Marshall County and also Wayne Chizik, who's the head of IT, to find out if that's the case and are they finding that it's something that has resolving some of the other issues that they may have had with some of the other things, because this ongoing issue between Tyler and Solution has been going on for many, many years.
Too long.
And, I mean, we they tell us one thing, and then they never produce what they say.
Exactly.
And at some point, you know, we're in a catch-22 wondering what our other options are, and without looking at other outside competitors coming in that can offer a service, I think we're kind of caught behind the eight ball. So I only throw that out just to give you another source to contact to see if they have found some success by looking at this other company.
I appreciate that. I'll check into that. I've worked with other products and been real happy. And we do also have COFAX licenses, and COFAX does have a content management solution. So there are a lot of things we can look at. A lot of players in the game, it's whatever works for us. And it was my understanding that everybody was dazzled and impressed with Tyler's presentation, which me too. However, they don't seem to be able to deliver on their products. So it's certainly worth looking into some other options.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Discussion and update on facade grant program. Leanne Harder. Morning, Leanne.
Hey. Hello.
I have a few slides. You'll recall some of the slides are from a previous presentation, but I just want to orient you again on the program. It's a new program. Just give you some background, then talk about the two programs and the deadlines. Facade grant program we see as a public-private partnership, and this was set up by the board earlier this year to really be a pilot program. This first round to determine the need, viability, and possible amendments to the program if it does go forward, which is one of the reasons I'm here today, to see if this is a viable program to continue. I'm not going to go into all the program guidelines. Applicants are communities along with a private entity. A one-time reimbursement grant up to 20% or not more than $10,000 towards a total project cost for facade improvements. City providing matching funds equal to greater than the amount. And then in 2014, this fiscal year, we did allocate $10,000. And I'm going to talk about that 20% here shortly. Eligibility, and I've already said that's the city working with eligible properties. It's, again, limited to those communities under 2,000 persons, continuing that thread of assistance to the smaller communities in Story County. Eligible improvements, it's the facade, it's not interior work, it's not landscaping, it's not lighting, it's just to improve the appearance of the facade and do any necessary construction improvements, rehab improvements for the long-term viability of the structure. And I don't need to talk about that. We also had the board approve a facade painting grant. This was a one-time $1,000 fund set up, no matching costs required of the community. It's just a $1,000 grant, up to 100% of the cost in paint, not to exceed $1,000. And then labor is not a factor, it's just the cost of materials. So we had two communities that applied and two communities that were funded. You know what? I'm not even showing you the slide. Sorry. Collins applied for the painting grant. The project was going to exceed $1,000, so it would be eligible for $1,000. Zering applied for facade improvements to the building that houses Nigel's along their main street. The total project costs that were put in the application were a little under $11,000, $10,916.20. I put that number in red to the right at 272905. When staff presented this, we calculated at 25% rather than 20%. And so that's something to discuss. I have some figures for you. This is how it was presented to the city of Zeering. And it was staff's confusion. In the original way that we saw this, it was a 25% match. And we did not change it. And when we presented it to you, we wanted it to be a 50-50 split, 50 from the applicant and 25 city, 25 county. So in the end, I'll talk to you about the figure that is before you today.
Yeah, but for clarification's sake, when we first approved it, did we actually approve the 20% or the 25%?
The guidelines are 20%. The project approved was 25%.
Okay.
But leave the discussion there, because
okay.
I'll get back to
okay.
you. Because the total project costs for Zeering are less than the original estimate. Just these are the terms of agreement that are part of the facade program. Again, this is a pilot program, so we're really, you know, learning as we go and deciding if what are the terms that need to be best outlined to achieve successful projects. A couple of points I want to show on this slide. At the fourth bullet point down, where it says June 10th, 2014, the work approved for the grant shall be completed by June 10th, 2014. Zeering is completed, and they did come in this morning and file the applications or file the reimbursement request. Collins is not completed, and it's my understanding in speaking to the mayor via email yesterday, the materials had not yet been purchased either. The magic of June 10th, today, that's today's date, it's the last day we can file claims for this fiscal year. And so this actually should have read, the work approved for the grant shall be completed by June 30th, 2010, or 2014. All requests for reimbursement filed by June 10th. It's our standard practice. So that's a point that I'll get to shortly for discussion with the Collins project. And then the next line in orange is the applicant shall be responsible for at least 40% of the total approved project cost. As we go forward, if this is a program the board wants to continue, I think initially when we designed this program, we had 50% in there. And to be honest, Ryan and I cannot recall why we lowered it down to 40%. We wanted it to be a half and half program. So it was an equal approach for a public-private partnership. And that's where why you had the recommendation for 25% of the project costs. So as we go forward, this is something to discuss, too, what that number should be for the applicant. And then the last one is no changes to the approved project plan shall be made without prior consent from Story County. Specifically in the Zeering application, two options were presented. The one that was funded or approved for funding was for a brick facade. The option they chose to go with, because of structural and other limitations, was a stone facade, which is less than what was approved. So we may need to change this language too in the terms of agreement so that there's some more flexibility built in through the design, because Zeering did not approach us and tell us we're changing to stone from brick until after the project was completed. So technically the terms of agreement have not been met in that regards.
And then my question would be is that if the changes is actually less than the dollar amount that we propose, why is it such a big deal?
And
if it's going to be more, then I think that's where I would have more concern, saying, well, this didn't come by us. We did not approve that. So it's whatever cost above that for you doing that is going to be borne by you.
And I think that's where this language is, pardon me, extremely limiting. It doesn't give us the flexibility to have that discussion, which I would suggest if we go forward that we build that flexibility into the language. So the allowable award, again, is a one-time reimbursement grant as written up to 20%. I firmly believe it was staff's intention to have that be 25%. Or not more than $10,000 for the total project costs. So in the case of Zeering, what was approved by the Board of Supervisors earlier this spring at that 25% mark was the $2,729.05 for a brick facade work. They went with, and this was a total project cost of $10,916, that almost $11,000 I showed you previously. The actual work that was done was the stone front, about $1,700 less, $9,516. So up there are the two percentages that the county could choose for reimbursement. 20%, which is what is the letter in the, you know, specifically the letter in the letter of the requirements in the program guidelines, that would be $2,183, or going up to 25%, $2,264.75. As Wayne just pointed out, because the overall project costs were less, even funding it at 25% is less than what was approved by the Board of Supervisors back in March.
Zering expected to get 25%.
They recognize that the program guidelines say 20%. They would prefer to have the 25%, but they understand the program guidelines say 20%.
That's $80.
Roughly.
And it does fit within the budget. But it's something that, I mean, again, as a pilot program, we're trying to not say learn as we go, but this is definitely a new territory in which the
Story
County has never gone. Yeah. And so we're learning, and that's why we chose to approach it through a pilot program, so that we could have a couple trials and figure out the best way to approach this. So one thing for discussion today is a 20 or 25%. And then the time frame for Collins, are you willing to extend that June 10th work to be completed date out to June 30th, which I am sitting here saying that was staff's intention, that June 30th be the intention that work be done, no different than us year-end claim purchases.
So our total disbursement was not to be more than $10,000.
Not more than $10,000. Yes.
I would. It would be my suggestion to go ahead and pay the 25% reimbursement for the city of Zering, since that's, I think that was the overall intent in the first place. The only question I have about Collins is, it's the 10th of June. They haven't bought the materials yet.
As of, and I don't know if Drew has spoken to the mayor since I've had email conversation. As of an email I got Friday, he had indicated he could buy the materials prior to June 10th and get the claims submitted, invoices submitted prior to the deadline today, but he could not guarantee that the work would be done by June 30th. And I simply replied back, the work has to be done prior to June 30th in order for the board to approve a claim and pay it for this fiscal year.
Right.
And I did speak with Lisa as to whether or not these funds, if they're left over, could be designated for next fiscal year. I have some real concerns on extending the program out. We did it on a pilot basis. We've already learned some very valuable lessons, and we have some tweaking if we want to go forward with this program. But I think the first time out, just extending the deadlines is not a good practice.
Well, I'm in agreement with that, and also the fact that it sets a precedent for us that, you know, if we've reached an agreement that, you know, everybody who applies is expected to follow, even though we had a low number of respondents, I think it gives us more credibility. And then in future years, if we want to amend or change some of those things, then we can certainly do that as the next round of applications come through. But under the current plan, I'm in agreement with Paul in terms of the 10,000 that we're not really being able to exceed that, and I could see that we could go forward with the 25% in the case of Zering. But if this is not completed, I think the responsibility goes back to the city of is it Collins?
And quite honestly, what I did hear through the first round was the time frame was so tight that they didn't apply. And Drew can maybe validate this or add anything else he's heard. There are a couple of communities that said the time frame's tight. We cannot guarantee the work will be done, and so they chose not to apply. But we're interested, county, if you keep this program up. And we knew we would run into that, and quite frankly, we were very pleased with the applications we did get, especially the Zeering one. That's exactly what we are hoping this program accomplishes.
I think it's a worthwhile program. And like you said, there's some changes that we need to make in the language. The concern I have would be if the materials have to be purchased and the claim has to be approved by the 10th and the work completed by the 30th, once we've approved the claim, we've got no authority to see that work is completed. I mean, they can go out and buy the materials, and they can sit in the city shed until they get ready to use them. And you know, that could or could not reflect on any future applications that they make. But I'm concerned that the city of Collins hasn't, as of yet, that we know of, even purchased the materials. So that's my concern. But I do think it's a worthwhile program, and I do think moving forward, the deadline's not going to be nearly as tight as it was for this initial program. So I think we'd get more response or a better response from other communities that would be interested in doing it, knowing they've got more time to get the projects completed.
And that's what I hope to, following this round, get some direction from the board, time frame, and put on another agenda for a discussion as to what the time frame for this program is. Is it annually, two times a year? Is it every other year, biannually? How often do we offer this? And then do the tweaking we need. Because we now do have some positive comments from communities that were involved in it, and even like Shelley with Zeering had some suggestions for do this, maybe run this on different color paper when we're running different programs concurrently. It's getting kind of confusing for them to know which applications to submit back. And I know Drew's doing his hardest to make sure that it's communicated effectively, but I mean, this is done is exactly what it was supposed to do as a pilot program, achieve some success, and then let's see how to tailor the program efficiently and effectively.
Well, my suggestion would be, I mean, the deadline is the 10th, and they won't, you know, we're open for business until 5 o'clock this afternoon. If the city, 3 o'clock.
3 is our claim deadline, I think.
If they can submit the claim by 3 o'clock, then I would suggest that we probably approve it, and with anybody, we're just, you know, we're hoping that the work gets done by the 30th, as it says in the guidelines. So I guess that's where I'm going to land.
Yeah, and we have historically had some issues with construction and building and so forth. A lot of factors could come in, and they may not necessarily have been able to complete it on a certain date. But as long as the products have been purchased and they're in the process of doing it, I don't think it's as much of a concern for us at this point.
And like I said, Zeering is 100% completed.
Right.
And they have the required matching. They have the applicant or the property owner with required investment in it. And so that one, I have the claim downstairs ready to sign and bring up. It's the painting facade. The facade painting grant is still the questionable item.
Well, based on the agenda and the way it's there, it's mostly just a discussion and update, but I think it would be appropriate for you to go ahead and communicate with Collins regarding, our discussion that we had today. And then if you want to come back at a later board meeting and we talk about looking at the time frames and any adjustments that need to be taken, we can certainly do that.
I would hope that they can get to Lowe's and buy $1,000 of the paint.
And he might have done that since.
Yeah.
He might have done that since we last emailed.
Okay. Thank you.
Just what? Oh, okay.
Okay.
Just while I have your ear too, another program. Drew and I are going to host a meet and greet session with communities and school districts next Monday here in this room to talk about the next round of urban renewal applications. What we're finding, we're both getting a multitude of questions, like how much money is available, and we quite simply say we don't know what types of projects. And we thought it might be the best way to approach it, bring all the parties together, and have some good dialogue.
Yeah.
I talked to you the other day, and just if you'd reach out to somebody from the Fair Board, whether it be Jeff Longnecker or I think maybe Michelle Adams.
Good. Okay. Good. Thank you.
He's on assignments and committee meeting update.
Briefly, I met with Deb Seelroth yesterday, and basically our discussion centered around the item on the agenda, the revised 2080 agreement with the Central Iowa Community Service affiliate. It was just more or less something that the governing board did approve at its last meeting, and we wanted to bring this back. And there will still be some discussion that will happen at the governance board level regarding if amendments do are proposed, whether or not boards of supervisors of the respective counties will indeed want to pass that. We're changing the language to say that that option is certainly going to be there, but it's not necessarily required under the original proposals. So I think that is something to be aware of. The biggest change in that 2080, we started out with great intentions, thought that we would get 100% attendance from all member counties at every meeting. We found out in the last meeting that we did not have a quorum, and we had to have a special meeting conference call to take care of some actions. And so in the bylaws, we have now changed to say a majority of the members present can actually take action. And I think that's going to facilitate our ability to move forward and conduct business in an appropriate manner. So that's where most of our discussion took place yesterday. And then both of us will be meeting with Parker Dennison on Thursday, which will be a recap of their work with CLP. And several members of the Regional Governance Board will be in attendance there, because this will be a presentation to the Regional Governance Board, and then that information then will be brought back and shared with the Board of Supervisors at a later date. Good. Okay.
And I'll pass on liaison assignment. Public forum number two, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. I see anybody moving to the mic. Announcements from the Supervisor Wayne.
I should have brought my iPad here. Drew, are you aware, any of you, there's a public meeting in Huxley tonight, some of the DOT. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not supposed to
be. Okay, yeah.
I think it's not really even a presentation.
No.
They'll have some
maps
out. They're going to redo Highway 69 from Highway 210 south into Ankeny, and I think they've got some maps laid out, and they're going to talk about the detour route, and it's just a
right.
There'll be information there for the public. I don't think there's any
no action. No, it's usually no formal presentation. Yeah,
but there will be DOT staff there to answer anybody's
right.
questions
right.
if they do.
So
have
yeah, I didn't think I was going to go, but I've been to several, but I didn't think this was going to be much substance to that, so forth at this point in time. So that's the only thing that I had at this point.
Okay, I'll pass. I'll take a motion for adjournment.
So move.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.